This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When I used to fill in as host of Weekend Edition Sunday, the thing most people wanted to bend my ear about was this.
Yes, last week's challenge came from listener Kate McDonald of Murphy's, California. I asked you to think of a common French word that everyone knows, add a V, as in violin, to the beginning, and an E at the end. The result is the English language equivalent of the French word. And the answer is vin, V-I-N, which is the French word for wine. If you put a V at the beginning and squeeze it up to the V of vin and add an E at the end, you get the word wine.
New York Times puzzle editor Will Short's weekly word challenge infuriates many listeners, while others say it is the only reason they listen. Crossword puzzles have the same effect on people. Some love them, some hate them. Independent newspaper here in Durham has just launched a new series of crossword puzzles called Solve Locally. These are puzzles using local themes and constructed by people who live in the Triangle. The editor of this series is Mark Maximoff, and he has created the first puzzle, went to print last Wednesday. Mark has competed in the American Crossword Puzzle Tournament since 1998, and twice he took second place in the South Region. He's also a freelance writer for the Indy, and he's going to tell us why puzzles are more than just idle words. Mark, welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about this. What makes somebody good, do you think, at solving a crossword puzzle?
Well, a lot of people ask me, there are a lot of people who say, I'm just not good at crosswords. And my answer always to those people is, well, do you solve crosswords? There's basically one way to get good at crosswords, and that's just to simply do them. I tell a lot of people that a crossword is not a trivia quiz in the shape of a square. There's more to it than that. People will initially just look at a bunch of clues and say, oh, I didn't really get any of those, and they'll give up then. But you pick the easy ones first, and that gives you a hint for the next one, and it engages more mathematical reasoning skills, and it becomes more than just, do I know the answer to this question or not?
So you can actually come up with a strategy, and it will help you solve them.
That's right, yeah. And so only the practice of solving them is what's going to make you good at solving
them. And in part that's true because there are certain words and clues that come up over and over again. You can start knowing the answer pretty quick.
That's right. It's in the nature of crossword construction, which I've dabbled in. This is the puzzle that's in the Indy this week. It's my first puzzle that was published aside from newsletters of friends. But I've done enough constructing to know that what happens is you start to having to rely on certain words that pop up a lot in crossword puzzles. For instance, every fencer in America knows the three kinds of swords used in fencing. They're the épée, the foil, and the saber. Similarly, every single crossword solver in America who solves regularly knows those same three swords, just because that E-P-E-E, that combination of three E's and one consonant is very useful for filling in, a difficult part of the puzzle.
And that helps certainly the people who make crossword puzzles. What made you decide to start making them?
Well, the origin of my wanting to make the Solve Locally puzzle for the Independent is, the Independent, which I've been writing for a few years, they concentrate on local content to a greater extent than most other weeklies I've seen in America. They run a syndicated couple of comic strips, and they have the astrology. But aside from that, they really focus on local content. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if we had a local crossword puzzle to go with that? And one of my models for that is a couple years ago, the New York Times ran a week-long series of puzzles by the Brown University Crossword Club. And apparently in Brown, a bunch of the students got really interested in crosswords. They started this club, and they had like 30 members, and they got enough kids interested in it that they started constructing their own puzzles and talking about it. And a couple of them had constructed for the New York Times, and Will Shorts found out about this and asked if they would do a weekly series. And I thought, well, if the students at Brown can put this together, I would love to see if we could get the Triangle community of crossword solvers to do the same thing.
So you did. So you had help in putting this together then?
Yes. Well, what I did is, since I attend the tournament, I wanted to know that if I started this series that I might not be able to get enough local constructors to really get this thing going. So what I did is I got a hold of some national constructors to make some puzzles for me so that I would have in my back pocket a good half dozen at least puzzles to start this thing off, because I didn't want to be scrambling month to month. So I contacted some national constructors, and though I would like this puzzle to be made entirely by locals, I really needed to know that I could roll this thing out successfully. So I had some national constructors, and I said, look, please make me a puzzle that is themed to the triangle. Even if you don't live here, if you've never lived here, make me some puzzles that have somehow Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, Duke.
I'll send you a bottle of barbecue sauce. You'll be fine.
That's
you'll
right.
get it from there. Yeah.
That's right.
So you did that. So now you've got them. You've got a group of local constructors. So give us an idea what kinds of, you know, if you can not give too much away, a couple of clues and kind of how it sounds local and how it's going to look local when I fill it out.
So what I'm going to have is, so as people who do a lot of crosswords know, every good crossword has a theme to it. It's not just simply a bunch of words arrayed in a grid. There's a theme that's usually like... There are a number of long entries that tie into one single thing. I have gotten so far, these are from the National Constructors. I've got a puzzle that is themed to famous Duke grads. I started getting a lot of puzzles based on Bull Durham, the movie, and I had to like tell everybody, you know, that's the first thing a lot of people think of when they think, I'll make a theme based on somewhere in the triangle. They think, Bull Durham. Well, I had about three or four different people think of that one independently, so we're going to have to put a lid on that. But these are the kind of things you want to think about.
So then they'll all be themed that way, and we'll see a lot of local names and local venues and that kind of thing that will recognize. What makes a good crossword puzzle?
I would say there's a couple different things. The theme, the quality of the theme, first of all, when it comes to the fill, this is one of the terms that constructors use for just the other words in the puzzle, and those are not important. There's no way to fill every word in a crossword with relevant words. So the rest of the words aside from the theme are just called the fill. With the fill, you want to have interesting clues. You can clue something very straightforwardly, or you can clue it with kind of a little joke or, you know, something a little more clever. So that's one of the main things to make a crossword fun, is what's the quality of the clues for the fill. And nowadays, as far as putting the fill into the grid, there are computer programs that can do that, which is really changing the accessibility of crossword construction. Now there are people who you can buy a program for, I think it's around $200, think up a theme, which only a human being can do. No computer could ever theme a puzzle to North Carolina. But once you come up with that theme, the computer will do the rest. But there's still the human element, how you clue it. The computer can have a database of clues, but if you really want to make a puzzle more interesting, you come up with your own original ways to clues to make the clues.
So the easiest thing for the computer would just be to fill it in.
That's
so
right.
Then I've got it all filled in. I look at the words. I can come up with clues for those words once I have them.
Right.
Is there any correlation between being good at doing crossword puzzles and being good at making them?
That is, I want to tell you, I've gotten some response for the first puzzle in the series was created by me and it was published on Wednesday. I've already gotten some response. I've gotten some local people who are really excited and they're like, I can't wait to make my first crossword. This is great. I'm thinking of themes already. They're throwing themes at me and saying, do you think this would work? And I'm, you know, for the most part saying, that's great, go with it. I've gotten a few letters from people who are dissatisfied with the difficulty. And I will admit, for my first puzzle, I was... seeking a little bit to evangelize among the non-crossword solvers.
You made it too easy?
Too easy. The funny thing about crosswords, there is no way to satisfy everybody. The New York Times has the luxury of having a daily puzzle. It starts out easy on Monday, gets harder every day. Saturday is very difficult. What I have is once a month I have a puzzle. If I make it hard enough to satisfy the hardcore solvers, they're just going to fly through the thing. But if I make it easier enough for, you know, entry-level people, they're all going to complain and say, this is too easy, I'm bored. So I'm going to have to hit a sweet spot in there.
Here's what you do. You put the easy one in the paper, right? And then everybody, you evangelize, you bring along a few disciples, and then you just put a harder one online.
Drive them
to the website.
We could do that. That would double my workload, but...
It's no problem for me.
So what I was meaning to get around to saying is that... So some of the people who have complained to me and they say this puzzle is too easy, what I want to say to them back is, well, take the next step. Construct me a puzzle. That is a bigger challenge, no matter how good you've gotten at solving them. And I've been doing puzzles my whole life. And I basically go to the tournament and you can pretty much solve any puzzle that you throw at me. Constructing them is a whole other level of difficulty. So I'm wanting to generate enough people locally. If they're expert solvers and this puzzle's too easy for them, well, why don't you show me what you got?
Why don't you make one without Phil? Come on, I want a theme puzzle, no fill, and you win a year subscription to the Indie.
That would be free. Historic. I think that would get published in the New York Times. They give you $1,000 for one of those puzzles.
So. All right, let's do it. So when you're doing it by yourself and you're not using a computer, how do you do it? Do you start with just a whole list of words, figure out how you're going to grid them, or where do you start?
Here's the difficulty with constructing, and it gets pretty technical. I will recommend, if anybody listening wants to get the full lowdown on how to construct, we used to have here in the Triangle a constructor named Patrick Berry. He used to live in Carrboro. I would say he's universally acknowledged as one of the top crosser constructors in the country. I would say he's pretty much the best. You can't get any better. He wrote a whole book on how to construct crosswords. It's called Crossword Challenges for Dummies. It's part of the Dummies series. But he really goes through all the technical details about what you have to consider very thoroughly. So I actually read that book. It was very helpful. I made a couple puzzles before I read it, but after reading it, it made a big difference. The first thing you have to do, once you have your theme, the real challenge of coming up with a theme, first of all, it has to, you know, be a certain number of words that really relate in the clever way that we're used to seeing in crossword themes. Secondly, your themes have to be symmetrical to each other. Every good crossword is diagonally symmetrical. So if you have four theme entries and they're 12, 12, 12, and 13 letters long, well, you're sunk. You need to have two 12s and two 13s, two 13s and two 14s. And this gets tricky. You really have to, you know, once you come up with your idea, you've just started and you have to work in something symmetrical.
So is this more math than language? Now I'll move from constructing to solving.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's more math than language?
Well, it certainly engages. The great thing about crosswords is it engages both sides of your brain, the word side and the kind of mathematical, manipulating figures side. Some of the top solvers at the crossword tournament are mathematicians, musicians, people who, you know, think abstractly. Having a big database of knowledge is only part of the equation. The other part is being able to, you know, find patterns in letters. And
tell us about the tournament. What's that? Because ordinarily we just sort of think of sitting alone, you know, at your table filling out the crossword puzzle. But a tournament, I guess, what, hundreds of people hanging out doing this together.
Yeah, hundreds of people. And that's really what's unique about it is there are tens of millions of crossword solvers in America. Will Shortz has some number. I think he threw out 50 million, something like that, who solve crosswords regularly. Every person who does it alone in a room, or sometimes you do it with your partner or something like that. But so Will Shortz started this tournament about some 30 years ago. He was really young. And there had been crossword tournaments back in the 1920s, the first wave of crossword popularity. It was a fad in the 1920s, and it was, I think, more popular then than it ever has been since. And they had some crossword tournaments then, but there really wasn't one until Will Shortz started the American Crossword Puzzle Tournament again. I think that was in the 70s. And it's just an amazing feeling to take a hobby that you've been doing alone for your whole life or for however many years and go into a room and there are 700 other people solving, talking about the puzzles. It takes whatever interest you already have and just multiplies it. And it's such a, you know, it really doubles your interest.
So are they kind of cutthroat? Do they do things to psych you out? Just start shouting random words to confuse you? Or?
Well, to be honest, in the tournament, there are only about a dozen, two dozen people who really contend for the championship. Mm-hmm. The difference between the number one solver and the number 10 solver is as great as between the number 10 and the number 50 solver. And most people at the tournament are really only there for fun. I mean, it's really half tournament, half convention. So half the people there are just there to solve puzzles. They're not even really necessarily trying to go that fast. But once you're in the top levels, those people are really, really fast. And the point is not to get the puzzle correct, but to speed through it. And to watch the top people do that is really just, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, but when you speed through it, you have to be right when you're done, right?
That's right. If you make one mistake, you're basically out of the running. Yeah.
No.
People who have seen the crossword documentary, Wordplay, have seen this in action. They've seen the final round, and it's just awe-inspiring.
So what is the job of the crossword puzzle editor?
So the editor, what my job is going to be, and, you know, Will Shortz is really my role model in this. He gets, I think he said, 100 submissions a day. Well, you know, so far I've got 8 submissions total, so there's a slight difference. But your first job is to winnow through the puzzles and pick the ones that you think are winners. Your second job, though, is to adjust the cluing and jigger it so that it's the right level of difficulty. And for my first puzzle, I made it. I have some test-solving friends of mine who test-solved it, and they said, this is about a Tuesday. And I said, that's good. For my first puzzle, I kind of want, you know, it's going to be an entry-level puzzle.
This is reference to the New York Times, Monday easiest, Saturday hardest, you're a Tuesday.
That's right. Right. Yeah. And that is the reference used by crossword people. For, okay. We all know, you know, we can all gauge off the New York Times. So they said, this is about a Tuesday. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take the clues that are given to me by the constructor, and I'm going to jigger them and try to make the difficulty, I might up the difficulty a little bit for the next puzzle, just as a warning to you to you who have tried the first one. But that's one of the other jobs is to, and to make sure that everything makes sense. And you know, I'm going to have test solvers to make sure about that too.
So. All right. And constructors can get in touch with you easily?
Yes. I think it's puzzler@indieweek.com, or it's in the current issue of The Independent. There's an email address where I can be contacted.
All right, Mark, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Solve Locally will be printed once a month in The Independent. First installment on the stands right now till the end of the day, I guess. Answers are going to come out tomorrow. Mark Maximov is the series editor and sometimes a designer of crosswords and a frequent contributor to The Indy. That's our program for today. Thanks for listening. You can find us at stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Alex Granados and Sean Wen. Sarah Edwards is our intern. Robin Copley, the technical director. The managing editor is Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.